Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball season is heating up. Odyssey has you covered with the most entertaining coverage of your team. Stay locked in and in the know with the local voices you trust as they bring you unfiltered takes, recap games, react to the latest team news, and talk to callers. Listen to your favorite shows for free on the Odyssey app, Odyssey.com, your smart speaker, or in the car with Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
One of the great things about the Chicago City Hall press room is that it has a great group of journalists who are alongside you as history is made and shaped. And it's great when one of them can put some of those moments into context and let us see them through his or her eyes. Well, this weekend, we'll hear from a friend and colleague who has literally written the book on Lori Lightfoot's 4 years in office. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. My guest this weekend is Gregory Royal Pratt, political and investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and he is the author of a book whose title encapsulates the story of the city's last mayor. It's called The City is Up for Grabs, How Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis. Well, that's a mouthful, but it's an accurate one. Greg and I, and of course, several others have spent years side by side covering City Hall, and I congratulate him for writing a book that's a really good read. Gregory Royal Pratt, welcome to the answering questions side of the equation and not just asking them.
It feels weird, but it also is good to see you.
Likewise, likewise. We miss you here in the press room, but there's a young lady named Alice Yin sitting at your desk now, and we do miss you, but she's really good. And we're glad to have her. Anyway, let's talk about the book and its subject. Both of Chicago's only two female mayors served only one term. Jane Burns, the other one. I don't want to make too much of that. After all, Michael Bolandic, Burns' predecessor, also only got 4 years in office. But Jane Byrne came from inside the system. I would think we would look at Lori Lightfoot as more of an outsider, right?
I think that's right. Although, you know, it's very different to be a department head than it is to be a politician. And I think that from what I understand, Jane Byrne had similar turmoil as Mayor Lightfoot did in terms of how she led and how things went. Obviously, she had a lot of issues with the labor unions. But that's it is an interesting coincidence of history.
Indeed. And like her successor, Brandon Johnson, Lightfoot, and you cover her campaign in this book, came from near the back of the pack to win the mayor's race after a long and bitter campaign. How did that play, that race and coming from nowhere play into how she governed coming in, or did she just ignore some things?
I think that it created a problem for her to win and win the way that she won. So what happened was she was a long shot in 2018, and she ends up catapulting to the top once Alderman Ed Burke's legal problems start to become an issue. And so Alderman Ed Burke's corruption charges and investigation by the feds turns the race into a referendum on who's an outsider and who's connected and who's involved with the machine. And Lori is not involved with the machine, and she's against the machine, and she was a prosecutor. And in fact, she had thrown a crooked alderman into prison when she was a prosecutor, Virgil Jones of the 15 Ford. And so she ends up winning the election, and she wins very big over Tony Preckwinkle. And the problem with that is that while Mayor Lightfoot was and is a very intelligent woman who has a lot of virtues, she didn't win because of those virtues. She won because she was at the right place at the right time. And I think that she didn't fully grasp the moment. You know, she thought the moment was more about her. So she started to throw away some of the relationships. I talk about Willie Wilson, the Black gospel singer and businessman who takes her around the South and West Side during the campaign. She dumps him before she even gets sworn in. And so I think that all of these, I think that when you win and you think everybody is with you, that's not always the right lesson to have. I mean, it's kind of an accident that, you know, that you win a race like that the way she won. But I think it got to her head.
And it seemed at times that she saw her mission. For example, as I recall, one of the reasons why she pushed Willie Wilson away was he started wanting to talk about jobs for some of his people and things that that he might get in return for his support. And she came in with this idea that we're not going to be like the old ways. And you know, I would ask, when was it apparent that this wasn't going to be a typical or traditional mayoralty?
Well, you know, always clear, you know, that we have never seen someone like Lori Lightfoot before. And so that part was pretty spectacular. You know, I mean, she was a lady who, you know, the first picture of her in the Chicago Tribune is from like 2002. And she is head of the police oversight department within the police department, the agency within the agency. And she's poking her finger in the face of Aaron Patterson, who is who was a famous wrongful conviction case. And so, you know, that willingness to shake things up was always clear. I think when it became really obvious was the famous moment at her inauguration, when she turns to the aldermen after saying that fixing corruption is in their best interest too. And she turns and faces them, and they get up and they applaud, but they're very angry about it because they felt that she was saying that they were corrupt. And that never changed. And that was a full self-inflicted wound.
Hmm. And it seemed to play out through much of her early relations. You know, there were and can you talk a little bit about that? How did she relate to the alders? Even before we started calling them alders, they were all aldermen at one point. Finally, we started getting the vernacular right. But how did that play out as she made the rounds, and did she make all the rounds?
So, you know, I mean, one of the stories I tell is she went to Washington, D.C., and I went with her to meet some people in D.C. And she went out there and she met with Ivanka Trump before she had met with most of the aldermen. And so she's having a meeting with Ivanka Trump, and they're not. It was really upsetting for a lot of the aldermen because they hadn't met with her yet. And Alderman Gil Villegas was the alderman that she asked to be her floor leader. And he used to ask her to go have breakfast once or twice a week with an alderman and their state rep and their state senator, and just go build some of these relationships. And she just didn't want to do that. And so it was some missteps because, you know, the aldermen are who pass your agenda, not Ivanka Trump. And all they really want is to be heard.
Mm. And that's going to be I would think that's a theme throughout her 4 years, really, to varying degrees. And yet she had to go up against some crises. And I mean, let's talk a bit about that, because there were crises that were brewing as she became mayor. COVID came up fast, but crime was always going to be an issue. How well did she handle? Did she seem to handle the pandemic, especially at the beginning?
So I think that the pandemic was more or less her finest moment, and it's a little bit of a misunderstood moment because we think of her as being really tough on the mitigations and on closing stuff. And for the most part, she was against closing a lot of the things that got closed. And she was fighting with Governor Pritzker, and Governor Pritzker overruled her. One of the things I give her credit for, though, is that she and the governor didn't want to be bickering in public the way that the governor of New York and the mayor of New York City were fighting in public every day. She didn't want to do that, and they were able to work together. But we're always going to remember the tough, strong lady that got us through COVID. And we're also going to remember the tough, strong lady who got us through some other crises. But we're also going to remember the tough, strong lady who did it in the most chaotic way possible, over and over, where, you know, nothing was ever easy and everything was difficult. But, you know, she deserves respect for doing her level best and getting the city through COVID. There's really no doubt in my mind of that, even though it is a more complex, richer story.
Yeah, indeed. And I think that was one of the few times that we also got to see an example of her humor. Because, I mean, let's face it, how many mayors would have done funny ads about staying home? You know, a controversial issue. But she did ads that had, you know, and I think some of it was her humor, as opposed to just some writer trying to shove her into a role.
That's one of the misunderstandings about her. She's very funny. she's a and she has a little bit of a mean streak. Like, she would be a good roaster, like, you know, if when you're retiring someday, although you're never going to retire, but if you ever decide to retire, if I ever decide to retire, bring her in to do the roast, because she's excellent at it. But she's a funny lady, and it showed in those moments too.
Indeed. But let's face it, one of the themes throughout the book, one of the themes throughout her years is the mayor versus people, friends even. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, there are people who were with her who sometimes were a little upset with her.
It's one of the lessons I tell people about the Lightfoot years is that you have to adapt your style to meet different styles. So her style is, number one, she wants to be a prosecutor and she wants to beat the problem, and every problem can't be beaten. And at the same time, you have to nurture relationships to be an effective leader. Yes, there are people that sometimes you're going to need to beat up, but most relationships aren't beat up relationships. And so she didn't quite get that. And so I often like to tell the story of her and Alderwoman Susan Sedlowski Garza, who she used to be close with, and they would exchange text messages that said, "I love you, I've got your back." And then by the end of it, Sue was so frustrated that she couldn't get straight answers and she couldn't get her calls returned, and she would get inconsistent responses, that she gave an infamous interview where she said, "I've never met someone who has alienated everyone, police, firefighters, teachers, manufacturing, business, aldermen, and that's it." And that was a recurring story where, you know, she couldn't convince her friends that she was their friend because she had this push away style. And that's really one of the tragedies of the administration.
I will not name the person, but there was somebody in government who was talking with me about Mayor Lightfoot. In fact, at the time that she was still mayor, and suggesting that she was someone who, if she got angry with you, would hold a grudge, would not let go of that anger. And in politics, sometimes you have to just realize that a person is against you on this one thing, but you're going to need them on something else. And so at the end of it, you take a deep breath and you go back. And as an example, in our past, Rahm Emanuel was a person who would blow up at someone and scream at them, have it out, tell you what he thought, take a deep breath, and then come back to you later and go, "All right, now how do we get out of this?" And it's dissipated. I gather you saw some of that kind of feeling with Mayor Lightfoot as you researched this.
Yeah, you know, the way I put it in the book is that sometimes you've got to slap someone, but then you have to kiss the boo-boo. And she didn't know how to kiss the boo-boo. And so she would get in a fight with somebody and then not get over it and write you off. And, you know, for me as a reporter, it happened as well, where she respected me and my work when I started challenging her on some FOIA request denials, which is requests for public records. And they said, "No," I said, "You're wrong." She took that personal, in a way that was really unfortunate as well, because, you know, my job is to file FOIA requests and look into records and sometimes push back on them. And it was never personal for me, but it became personal for her.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is Chicago Tribune journalist Gregory Royal Pratt, author of the new book, The City is Up for Grabs, How Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis. While she was mayor, talked with Lori Lightfoot about her relationships with aldermen, her relationships with other politicians. We don't even get into her relationship with the Cook County Board President, because that one had its own dynamics. She always maintained that despite all the headwinds, despite the reports of conflict that she got things done and often got them done, you know, well. And is that a fair assessment?
You know, sometimes you'll see people say that she be really critical and diminish her stature as mayor. And I don't think that's fair because she did get plenty of stuff done. On the flip side, that was really, really a mistake on her part, the way she would, she was in denial about the fact that her relationships were bad. And that really hurt her. So yeah, she had accomplishments, but you know, one of the stories in the book that is, I have a chapter is called Adults in the Room, which is from a text message that she had exchanged during the time when in Springfield, they were going to take away power over the school district from the mayor. The CTU wanted to take power and give it to an elected school board. And she lost that fight because she didn't have those relationships in Springfield. And so I do think that there's some denial from her when she talks about how her relationships weren't that bad and how they did get stuff done, because there was a lot of stuff that didn't get done because of those lack of relationships. And so I think that was sometimes you'd watch her with these relationships and you'd want to shake her and say, you know, like, no, the relationships are not good. You have to fix them.
Hmm. I want to talk a little bit about how you got this story, because much of Lori Lightfoot's story in this book, and yeah, I actually read the entire draft book that you sent me, is told in her own words, and those of her inner circle and aldermen and women, the text messages. And I'm not sure that I have read a book or even read as much reporting as we have had during her tenure as that. And I wonder if this book won't single-handedly change the way people in government communicate. I mean, what do you think about that? Because that is where you got a lot of your the backup for the kind of reporting that you were doing.
So, you know, as a reporter, I talk to a lot of people, and I also am a records freak. So I'm asking for calendars, I'm asking for text messages, and I'm asking for emails. And it helps to document the history. So, you know, first and foremost, this is a book about Chicago government and how it works. And there's a lot of supporting in their words, language and commentary that even though Mayor Lightfoot didn't talk to me for the book, you can see her talking in her words through the book, because I have her words in real time. I have her conversations with different people. The reporting on that is really eye-opening, I think, for people of how it works. But one of the things that shocks me is just how much she was texting and how much she didn't change. Because I think we did our first story about her text messages in late 2021, and she kept texting. And you would think that you would stop putting some of these messages in writing, because they weren't helpful. You know, they looked bad in the press to a lot of people, and then it would aggravate them. Like, she texted Maria Haddon, the alderwoman of the 49th Ward, and told her, well, Maria texted her and said that we need to take down the Columbus statue after the riot down there, and can we talk about getting that done? And Mayor Lightfoot responded, I'm always happy to talk, but I don't take kindly to demands. And of course, Maria's looking at that. She's like, that's out of proportion. You know, and so, in general, Governor Pritzker, Mayor Lightfoot was texting Governor Pritzker. She was angry at him about something, and he kept texting her back. And he said, please do not text me, please call me, because that's the more normal standard of doing business. So I do think that's a lesson for politicians, is, you know, be careful what you put in writing. Although I am, you know, selfishly grateful that she put so much in writing, because it was really helpful to seeing how the city actually runs.
And Is that something that that you think is going to change? I will tell you, I've talked to some people, especially since your book has come out, but also just people in general saying that you're, in fact, somebody who was doing FOIAs said they're getting a lot of, when they get the ask for text messages, they're getting a lot of messages that say, call me. Well, someone will say, we need to talk, call me, and then you don't get any other traffic. Maybe is that one of the lessons?
Oh yeah, in general, and this is true for your listeners, whether it's a former mayor or a future mayor or a normal person and not a political freak, don't put too much into text messages. It's just good practice not to text as much as some people text. And Mayor Johnson, I have a bunch of Mayor Johnson's text messages as well, and he does not text the way she does. He is very much a, yo, good to see you, please call me. That's his signature, is he says yo, which is a much friendlier. I think it is smart, and there's a rule, right? Like, before you send that email, before you send that text message, put it down and come back later and see if you still feel the same way. Because sometimes we start to put stuff in writing that we don't really mean because we're blowing off steam.
Mm-hmm. But now let's look at the broader picture. What are the lessons in government that we should learn? Because, and as you point out, a lot of good happened. There are things that Mayor Lightfoot started that are not going to go away. Credit to her that the LaSalle Street revitalization is pretty much going to go the way that she wanted it to. In fact, if anything, they're adding to the plan. Invest Southwest, criticized on some scores, but still is the basis for redevelopment on the south and west sides. But people aren't going to necessarily think of that when they think of Lori Lightfoot. So what are the things that politicians going forward should think about their legacy and about what they are accomplishing and maybe communicating?
First is that people need to have a better relationship with media, and not take things personal. And media is not just me and you sitting in a press room. I mean, media is the millions of people reached by your broadcast signal and the hundreds of thousands of people who subscribe to the Chicago Tribune. It is not just talking to me. It is talking to my readers. And you can get mad at me because you didn't like a story I wrote, but you got to explain yourself and keep coming back in the same way that, that's a good lesson for readers for leaders, you can't just stop telling your story, because if you stop telling your story, other people will tell your story for you. There's aggravation, but you could still work together when you can work together. So like Brandon Johnson and Ray Lopez, or Ray Lopez is very critical of Brandon Johnson, as your listeners and as people in Chicago will know. There was a message where Ray Lopez texted Mayor Johnson and asked if he was at City Hall, because Ray was giving a little tour, and Johnson said yes, and he came up and he gave him a little tour to some of his visitors. That sort of little touch matters, and it may not play out on the day-to-day. It doesn't erase disagreements, but you have to be able to reach out and work with people, including people that you think are idiots or that you think are corrupt or that you don't like. You just have to work with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recall that there was a famous scene when Mayor Lightfoot got in the face of Alderwoman Jeanette Taylor about a vote that she took, and that was a big pictures in the paper, and how these two were face to face. And what a picture that was, with the mayor's somewhat diminutive stature, and Jeanette Taylor is not that small. But I also recall that weeks later on the South Side, there was a groundbreaking for something at, was it Olive Harvey College? And the two of them were there and they were friendly. They even hugged at one point and spoke highly of each other. So, you know, you sometimes, what is the old saying? There are not permanent friends and permanent enemies, but permanent interests. Maybe that's one of the lessons. What was the biggest surprise to you as you were going through those email or the texts or anything as you went through this? I mean, we were all there, but what surprised you as you were putting the book together?
I was taken aback by the lack of consistency and the lack of execution on a plan. So, you know, when you become a mayor, you have to have flexibility and you have to adapt, but you also have to have your goal, your foundational posts that guide you and that anchor you and that strengthen what you're doing. So, you know, I talk about the police department where first she brought in former Los Angeles police chief Charlie Beck to lead the police department after she fired Eddie Johnson. And then she did a total 180 and brought in police superintendent David Brown from Dallas. And these two people have very different styles. Brown undid almost everything that Charlie Beck had done, and it had some negative results. And the issue there, what it reveals is that there wasn't a coherent strategy there. It was, oh, here's a name, sounds good. Here's a name, sounds good. Whereas you should have, if you were going to go forward with someone of Brown's strategy and that views policing the way Brown does, then the interim should have reflected that. Because if one of the lessons that Charlie Beck told me for the book was that in big organizations like police departments, if you're not clear and direct with your instructions, they will misunderstand either on purpose or on accident.
Indeed. Well, I would like to thank Gregory Royal Pratt for spending this time with us. His book is The City is Up for Grabs, How Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot Led and Lost a City in Crisis. It's published by Chicago Review Press, and it is everywhere. I know, I've seen it. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, wbbmnewsradio.com. There's a link on the homepage, and you can also find our podcasts on odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.